Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Chiefs football.
Touchdown, Kansas City!
And your home for Royals baseball.
Fastball hit high in the air, deep left field, way gone into the bleachers. A two-run homer for Bobby Witt Jr.
Watch The Drive by subscribing on our YouTube channel or listen on demand with the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This show is always going to stand on principles. Dippin' Dots are incredible. Red Lobster is the best restaurant that America has to offer. And baked beans are trash.
You're listening to Kansas City's FM Sports Station, 96.5 The Fan. Here's C-Dot.
Well, I can already tell that the text line's going to be supremely disappointed when they hear my voice. So many people. Is C-Dot going to be on after the Royals game is over? Answer, no. Carrington's off today. Logan Weber filling in for him here on The Drive after the first Royals spring training game of 2026. And I'm sure we'll get to that here in the hour and a half or so that we've got remaining in the program here on this Friday afternoon. Rob producing the show. As always, 913-586-7965 is our number. You know, it's the off season. There's a ton to get to still in the world of football, but there are days where it seems like the lead story just kind of jumps out at you without you even really having to think about it. Today kind of feels like one of those days, you know. And not necessarily along the lines of the Chiefs just won a Super Bowl, or the Royals won a World Series, or the Chiefs leaving Arrowhead to go to Kansas. Not quite at that level. But when I'm scrolling through social media and I come across an article that has the lead of the article, Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce sued. I'm sorry. That's going to stop me directly in my tracks. What do you mean Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce are being sued, and why? Can we expound on that just a little bit? Well, I'll go ahead and do it for you. I've got it from Michael Rothstein of ESPN. A sneaker company is suing Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, along with the partners of their restaurant, 1587 Prime, alleging trademark infringement. This story is bizarre for so many reasons, but the biggest reason behind it, and this is where I feel like this sneaker company has absolutely no leg to stand on. The suit is alleging that 1587 Sneakers started selling their shoes with that brand name on April 13th of 2023. However, the company did not file or apply for the 1587 trademark until October of 2025. Meanwhile, the steakhouse, the 1587 Prime restaurant that Mahomes and Travis Kelce own and operate, that company applied for the same trademark in December of 2023. So you're filing a lawsuit alleging trademark infringement despite the fact that they applied for the trademark 2 years before you did. Yes, I understand that you began operating before them, but you didn't have the trademark. So how in the hell do you expect to win this lawsuit? It makes absolutely no sense. Not to mention the fact that the trademarks fall under two completely different categories. The 1587 Prime trademark that Kelce and Mahomes applied for and got is under the restaurant and bar category. The sneaker company's trademark is clothing. Yeah, somebody in the text line's like, it's a non-story. It will get thrown out before it sees a judge. It's a money grab. Oh, you're damn right. This is an absolute money grab. This is, I mean, for nothing, for no other reason, there's no way they expect to win this lawsuit. This is a marketing thing. Like, this is a genius marketing strategy of, hey, we have the same name as Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes' restaurant. How can we get people to, lump us in? How can we get people to associate our brand with a brand like Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes? Oh, let's sue them. right? Oh, let's just, you know, so that way we rise into the news. We get people talking about it. Yes, I fell for it. I'm an idiot. It's borderline genius. I just hope that they're not paying an outstanding amount of money to a lawyer or a set of attorneys to actually try to litigate this whole thing. I just couldn't believe it. I'm just scrolling on social media and somebody's like, Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce sued. Hold on a minute. I need to click on that article and read it because that's the wildest thing I've heard today. Somebody said Mahomes and Kelce should sue the sneaker company. I mean, they would win, no question. And probably put the sneaker company out of business. I don't know if that's necessarily what Mahomes and Kelce would be looking for in that situation.
Has anyone ever heard of that sneaker company before?
No.
Like, it's not like Mahomes and Kelce named their steakhouse Nike or Adidas.
And it's not like they did it to spite this apparent sneaker brand.
Correct.
It's their numbers that they wear.
Mm-hmm. If they wore 5 and 81, that would be what it's called. But the sneaker company did what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to be in the news today and get people talking, and that's what it's doing. But I can't imagine any self-respecting judge. Now, I don't know a lot of judges, so maybe I'm not the lawyer, but I can't imagine a judge says, hey, they had this trademark in 2023. You guys had it in 2025. The lawsuit goes on. It feels like a PR stunt more than anything by this unknown shoe brand.
Yeah, I mean, it is an Asian-American shoe company that I'm just... Apparently, they were on Shark Tank at one point. Or at least that's on the Shark Tank blog website for some reason.
Also, and I apologize for interrupting, this might be stupid by me. How does it affect the trademark at all? Because isn't the steakhouse 1587 Prime? There's that other word
correct
in there, Prime.
Yes, like, there's an additional word. Like, not to mention they fall under completely different trademark categories. Like, I don't see how this... Yeah, there's no way this goes anywhere. 1587 Sneakers does have an Instagram page with a whopping 12,800 followers. For comparison, Mahomes and Kelce combined might have 10 million. Like,
does their steakhouse have an Instagram? I bet their steakhouse has an Instagram. They're too social media savvy. Their wives and fiancés are too social media savvy. I guarantee they outfollow that shoe company by a large number.
1587 Prime does have an Instagram account. 88,400 followers. Patrick Mahomes himself on Instagram has a ridiculous number of followers. Same thing with Travis. I mean, like, folks, what are we doing? I mean, I honestly have to believe that this is just sort of a marketing ploy. But according to the article, the sneaker company is asking for the restaurant group to no longer use the name, saying it causes confusion. Confusion for who? I think it's much more likely that people are Googling the restaurant and finding your shoe company, and that's more confusing for them than people Googling your shoe company and finding the restaurant. There's no way it's more confusing the other way around. The company also wants the restaurant to stop selling goods with the name on it and to be awarded unspecified damages. You are out of your damn mind if you think that that's going anywhere. No way, dude. Mahomes and Kelce will be able to hire an army of lawyers if they feel like it. You stand no shot in a court of law if it even gets to that point. That is the dumbest thing I think I've read all day today. Oh. You know, we'll talk about the spring training game coming up here in just a little bit. The Kansas City Royals are officially back in action. I know it's not a regular season game, but that's neither here nor there. The Kansas City Royals have made another free agent move, joining a catcher to the potential roster of this Royals team. I know that they brought back Luke Maley a couple weeks ago as a potential third catcher on this Royals roster. Here's another option for you. As Kansas City agreed to a contract with Elias Diaz, I believe it's a one-year deal, but it's a minor league deal with a camp invite. Of course, Elias Diaz has been around Major League Baseball for quite some time. Most recently, he spent the last couple of years with the San Diego Padres. He is a one-time All-Star back in 2023 as a member of the Colorado Rockies. He actually was the All-Star Game MVP that year, if you'll recall. Last year in San Diego, he hit 204 with 9 home runs and 29 RBIs. Did not have a great year, a 607 OPS. But 35 years old, he could be seen as a pretty reliable backup catcher. He's, you know, for the most part, been a pretty solid guy behind the dish throughout his career from a fielding standpoint. And I think we'll give maybe push Maley a little bit for that third catcher spot behind Jensen and behind, of course, Salvador Perez. I would not be surprised to see Matt Quatrero and JJ Piccolo and this Royals coaching staff and front office elect to carry three catchers on this team in the event of, you know, Salvador Perez's age at this point, and maybe they don't want to try to play him every single day at a bunch of different positions. Not to mention, you know, there's that possibility of Carter Jensen not getting off to as hot a start as you're hoping for if you're the Royals after the spectacular year that he had last year after getting called up from Omaha. It's an interesting move. I just feel like this Royals team, I mean, the whole offseason, we've just been waiting on that outfield name to come to the fore. And you traded, of course, for Isaac Collins, and you brought in Lane Thomas, but you just kept waiting for more outfielders or another outfielder. And instead, we got two catcher signings and a handful of recycled pitchers. It's been a weird month and a half signing-wise for this Kansas City Royals team in terms of the depth that they've elected to try to bring into the organization.
Listen, I agree. It has not checked the box. And we can talk, I mean, we can talk now, we can talk later in the show about, hey, do the Royals do enough in outfield? Like, it is going to be the major question this entire season with the team. Is their outfield good enough? I think their floor has raised, but I don't think their ceiling has changed all that much on what we think they could be. But this move to me is the same as John Means. And I don't mean that as any insult to John Means or this player. It is a guy who has had success in the league, has fallen on hard times. You minor league invite him. If you catch lightning in a bottle, party on Wayne. If you don't, it's not like you're doling out huge cash for this guy. He was an all-star. You mentioned the all-star game MVP means nothing.
No,
but
it
is something that he can put on his resume. And if he turns out to be a viable hitter and third catcher, and you got him for nothing on February 20th, we're going to talk about how J.J. Piccolo is a savant. If he is nothing and you cut him on May 15th, no one is going to talk about it on May 16th. It is a no harm, no foul move, the same way that John Means was when that came across. Hey, if you think he's healthy and catch lightning in a bottle and have him pitch like that again, more depth, party on. If he's can't get his body right because he's battled injury his career and he's a local kid and you have to move on, stinks for the player, but no harm, no foul. Those are the moves you see in February, so I have no problem with the Royals taking darts at guys with All-Star next to their baseball reference page.
Yeah, they're low-risk, high-reward moves at this point. You've got additional starting pitcher depth if it works. You've got potential bullpen arms if this thing works. I say that as if the Royals don't already have those things at their disposal. They've got plenty of starting pitching depth as it stands right now with Kolek and Berger potentially as more like those sixth or seventh starters that you have on the roster. And your bullpen, which was a strength for your team last year, is, I would say, unarguably better than it was a season ago. You know, with the Mears guy, as well as bringing other names back to this team. It's completely slipped
Matt
my brain.
Strom,
thank you, from the Phillies, who was a former Royal. Bringing him back to the organization, that he's a perennial all-star as a reliever. You pair those two with Urcig and Estevez. Schreiber, who's coming off a pretty solid year that he had last year. This bullpen looks even better than it did a year ago. It's going to be a fascinating year to watch the Royals. And we may talk a little bit more about, you know, did they do enough in terms of the outfield for this team? But before we hit the break here and get into the 5 o'clock hour, one other major storyline in the AL Central that came out today, it is official. Minnesota Twins ace pitcher Pablo Lopez will miss the entire 2026 season after a torn UCL. He will have Tommy John surgery. His year is done before it even began. And that is huge news for the Minnesota Twins, for the rest of the American League Central, after he had a spectacular year last year. It was limited because of injuries. He only started 14 games, but in those 14 starts, he had a 2.74 ERA and really was outstanding. 73 strikeouts across 75 and two-thirds. He is a high-volume, high-strikeout pitcher, has been for the last couple of years, dating back even to the end of his tenure with the Miami Marlins. So the Minnesota Twins, they're going to be without their ace for the entire season. It is now the second Tommy John surgery for him. He turns 30 in early March. He had his first Tommy John surgery when he was a member of the Mariners organization when he was still in the minor leagues. But, I mean, that's a tough blow if you're Minnesota. Your ace, a guy that's making almost $22 million this season, is signed through next year as well. Your pitching staff just got dealt the biggest blow it possibly could, and the year hasn't even officially started yet for the regular season.
I mean, I never considered the Twins a threat
Fair.
In 2026. I mean, I think their moves at the deadline in 2025 signaled that they weren't really trying to be competitive. But any semblance of competition left, I think, just flew out the window of Pablo Lopez, who, by the way, great pitcher, on top of all those things, absolute royal killer. So
yeah.
if there was one guy to avoid in that rotation with the Twins, and there's now none, that's only good for the rest of the division, including the Royals.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think the Twins were necessarily pushing for the division crown or anything, but they might have had been a little bit more competitive than the White Sox, potentially. But now you lose Lopez, so it's definitely a three-horse race for the AL Central crown right now between the Guardians, the Tigers, and, of course, the Kansas City Royals. But with the Tigers and that signing of Framber Valdez, I think that they kind of – they look to me to be the preseason favorite to win the AL Central, but that's not a knock against the Guardians or the Royals. I think that both teams have plenty of talent to push Detroit to win the division and help themselves make the playoffs. 913-586-7965. More coming up. The Royals win their first spring training game of 2026. We heard from Andy Reid today, who spoke with the media, talked about Travis Kelce, talked about Tyreek Hill and his potential reunion in Kansas City. Stick around for that. You're listening to The Drive. Logan Weber, Rob Britton, 96.5, The Fan.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
Back on the drive here after the Royals get a W in their first spring training game of the year, beating the Rangers 7-3. C-Dot out today, Logan Weber filling in alongside Rob Britton. We'll get to some Royals baseball here in just a little bit, I promise you. But in the meantime, Rob, I know we got to get through the hits.
Your workday is over.
Oh, yeah.
You're headed home, and now you're stuck in traffic. Time to get caught up on the biggest stories in Kansas City and around the country with C-Dot and Rob. It's time for the hits. Number one.
Logan, as always, the hits is brought to you by Baker University. Make your next era orange at Baker University, the first university in Kansas, and ranked number one in return on investment among private universities in the state. Baker University forever in our orange era.
Yeah, number one that I've got for you here is of spring training. Game one. Royals Rangers. Kansas City comes out on top 7-3 in this one. Highlight of the game, how about a homer for one Salvador Perez in this game? Michael Massey also with a home run of his own. His was a two-run shot. Massey finished 2-for-3 at the dish. Salvi himself 2-for-3. Bobby had a hit. Mikel Garcia. Royals as a team, 9 knocks, scoring in those 7 runs. Steven Kolek solid on the bump. His first time out this year, gave up just one earned across 2 innings, and then a smorgasbord of guys coming out of the bullpen. But Royals off to a decent start here in February, as they are now 1-0 on this new spring training season.
Are you the kind of person that looks deep into what happened in a spring training game?
Absolutely not.
I guess let me rephrase that. I, I'm not really, but this point in the spring, definitely not. If it's March 20th and you're 7 days away from the opener in Atlanta and 11 days away, and it's like, hey, you know, so-and-so is mowing people down out of the bullpen, he might make the roster. I will have those conversations on that date. Today, it's nice. Cool. Congrats. I'm happier we got to stay warm and didn't get hurt.
I can't remember. What was that year that the Royals were like super competitive during spring training? They were like, they like won the Arizona, or they finished like second in the league during spring training. I can't remember if that was 2023 or 2020, like one of those years where it was like, hey, the Royals actually looked really good in spring training, and then they still lost 100 games. Like, spring training is what it is. It's the preseason in the NFL. It's just like anything. It's exhibition games in college basketball. You're just trying to get your feet wet. You're just trying to knock the rust off, get the ball rolling, whatever other cliche I can throw into that sentence for no apparent reason whatsoever. That's all it is. I'm not going to put any kind of onus into how our team performs in spring training and assume that that's going to ultimately lead to success in the regular season. What else we got here on the hits? How about we heard from Andy Reid today? He talked about a couple of different things. He talked about changes to the offense. He talked about communication. Have they considered bringing Tyreek Hill back to this team? But I begin with some comments from Andy Reid about the conversations that he has had and the communication that's been had back and forth with Travis Kelce regarding his availability for this upcoming season.
As long as there's communication, I'm good. That means people want to move forward. And I think that's where Travis, I'm not trying to put words in his mouth at all. And I try to give him some space here. He's been doing this a long time and he can sort all that out as he goes forward. But we're proceeding with that, and there is communication going on.
I understand you're not trying to put words in his mouth, Andy, but what do you mean by we're moving forward? Moving forward with what? Moving forward with the communication? Moving forward with the season? I'm not quite sure what to make of that. It's another one of those things that he said nothing, but he did say something sort of subtly mixed in there, and I think there's been a lot of that. Like, I can't remember the exact quote from Travis's sister-in-law's podcast, Jason's wife, where he sort of alluded to coming back. You know, there was the Eric Bieniemy thing about how he's getting forward to getting back in the room and back in the building and chopping wood and getting to work with Travis and Patrick Mahomes again. There's just been like these subtle little like breadcrumbs that have been left along the way over the last couple of months where in November, December of last year, I thought I was dead set against it. There's no way Trav comes back. He's going to retire after this year is over with. But especially, I should say, after that Christmas Day game when he did the interview with Tony Gonzalez, I thought at that moment, there's no way 87 is going to be back in a Chiefs uniform next year. 2 months later, I would probably be surprised if he did announce his retirement. Everything that I've seen or heard over the last 5 or 6 weeks seems to me like a guy that really is leaning towards coming back for this team next year. Maybe I'm just glass half full. Maybe I'm being too much optimist here, borderline delusional. That's just the feeling that I get hearing Travis talk and hearing the people around Travis talk about whether or not he'll be with this team in 2026.
Listen, I'll take it a step further. Andy Reid's been doing this for a long time in Kansas City, and he very rarely says anything. So you got to kind of read between the lines. I think Andy Reid is telling you Travis Kelce's coming back. Now, he didn't say that because he's way too good at the media thing to say that. But when he says, I don't want to speak for Travis, but whenever there's communication, I feel good. I can't imagine Travis Kelce is communicating with the team being like, yeah, I'm done. If that was the case, there wouldn't be communication. It would be one sentence and we'd move on. I don't remember the exact timeline, but remember when the Eagles lost to the Bucks in the playoffs? Jason retired pretty much immediately after the season ended. This didn't drag out until late February. So if there's communication between he and Reid, if you've seen reports from Diana Rossini that there's growing belief around people around him that he'll be back and playing football again, it feels like Travis Kelce is coming back, and Andy Reid's saying there's been communication, and communication means that it's a good thing. I do think he's saying without saying something that I think we all kind of know. Travis Kelce's going to be back for 2026. Now, what contract number? I don't know. At what contract length? I would imagine just 1 year, but there are still questions to answer, but I think Travis Kelce is playing for the Chiefs in 2026.
I'm with you 100%. I mean, I agree with the sentiment of, like, if he was going to retire, I feel like we'd probably already know by this point. You know, NFL free agency, like the legal tampering period for the NFL is just over 2 weeks away. I think March 9th is when the tampering period starts, and then March 11th is when free agency officially begins. Travis has been around this league long enough, and he's got so much respect for Andy and Brett Veach and Clark Hunt and this Chiefs organization that if he was going to retire, he would definitely let them know with ample time to prepare themselves when free agency begins, or, you know, and in the leading up to the combine and the draft, of preparing themselves to find his replacement. All of that to say, I think Travis is coming back next year, much more likely than I do he retires.
I will say this, I do apologize, I had this wrong. Jason Kelce made that emotional speech on March 4th of 2024, announcing his retirement.
That's so, like, right before free agency.
That's
began.
Basically before free agency. I still think Travis Kelce is returning, but good note by the text line. I thought it was like he walked off the field in Tampa and walked to the podium the next day. It apparently was March 4th. I also think it's different, though, you know, watching Jason walk off the field in Tampa versus how Travis walked off the field. But that's a good note by the text line. Good catch. I will correct my comment. Jason Kelce did not immediately retire following the season. He waited till March 4th to officially announce.
So. Yeah, and that was, I mean, that's a slightly different situation than what Trav is dealing. Like, with Jason, everybody knew who the Eagles were going to pick to replace him. They already had the guy on the roster, right? They drafted Cam Jurgens in the second round of the NFL draft out of Nebraska 2 years before Jason retired. They knew that Cam Jurgens was going to be their starting center the day that Jason finally decided to hang him up. The Chiefs don't have that luxury, at least in my opinion. I was uncomfortably comfortable with Noah Gray being the heir apparent before last season started. After watching the last 17 games of the Chiefs season in 2025-26, there is no world where Noah Gray should be the starting center for the Chiefs when Travis Kelce decides to retire. So I don't feel like the Chiefs have the luxury of giving Travis that extra time to wait on his decision, and I think Travis understands that. We also heard from Andy Reid, and he was asked about Tyreek Hill. Big topic of discussion on Monday. I was filling in for Fesco and Dusty Monday morning during the President's Day holiday, and that news dropped at like 10:30, like right towards the end of our 8 to 11 show that we did Monday. So I didn't get much of an opportunity to discuss it, but it's all anybody wants to talk about. You pair that with the $40+ million that the Chiefs converted into a signing bonus for Mahomes to take it off the books for the salary cap. Well, here's what Andy Reid has to say about if they've considered Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, listen, we go through everything and everybody. I mean, that's how Brett does, and I don't even know if Tyreek is healthy right now, I mean, to do anything. So I'm sure he's working hard on that part of it and trying to get that all straightened out. But we talk about everything. So it's not, there's nothing in, you know, nothing happening there, but we know what you know, and that he's out there and cranking away, trying to get himself back to where he can play, you know, period.
Again, he doesn't really say anything, but somehow I walk away from those comments feeling slightly better about the Chiefs not signing Tyreek Hill back to this roster. And I don't know how you feel about it, Rob, but I despise the idea. He's 32 years old. He's coming off a major injury in which you've seen over the last year or two his productivity drop a little bit. He's not as fast as he once was. He certainly won't be coming off of an ACL tear. There's reports circulating that he may not play at all next season, like not a snap next year. because of this injury and potential setbacks and different things. Why? I've sort of been bracing for this possibility because it is like the quintessential Chiefs move to go re-sign a guy that's been with the organization and he's helped you be successful and bring him back because of his understanding of the offense, his relationship with Mahomes, and of course, Chris Jones, who was very vocal on social media about the idea of bringing Tyreek Hill back, Andy and Bieniemy. He knows all these guys. He's worked with all these guys. They did great things. And we know Tyreek Hill has expressed publicly regrets over leaving Kansas City for quote unquote a bigger bag and sacrificing potentially another two Super Bowls. This makes me feel like that's less of a possibility now that Tyreek Hill comes back to Kansas City. And if he does, I don't think they're going to be paying an arm and a leg for his services, comparatively speaking to somebody else. I think this makes me feel like he'd have to take a pay cut to come to Kansas City. And I'm not sure if Tyreek Hill's willing to do that.
I mean, I don't want Tyreek Hill back in Kansas City. And it is purely for on-the-field reasons. Because we can be honest, that Tyreek Hill carries a little off-the-field baggage. But I truly don't care about that. I care about the on-the-field part. And I don't believe he's going to be healthy enough to be a viable weapon in 2026. And if I'm wrong, and the Jags, picking a random team, pick him up and he's great, more power to the Jags for taking the risk. It's kind of similar to how it didn't work out. But remember Justin Ross, 31 teams or 29 teams, I forget the number. A huge amount of teams took them off his board because, you know, he would never pass a physical. The Chiefs kept him, took the risk, it didn't work out, so it goes. I kind of view Tyreek Hill the same way. He said on his Twitch channel he has another surgery still on the horizon this offseason. I understand football games aren't played for another 7 months, but if he got hurt in September and he's already had one surgery, he's rehabbing, and now a second one is on deck still, pass. I am a pass on Tyreek Hill. But I understand why Andy Reid asked the question. I understand that he had to put words together, but he did. I mean, that's Andy in his prime. Didn't say nothing. We talk about everyone. We don't know if he's healthy. We only know what you know. We know Tyreek Hill, but we don't know anything about Tyreek Hill. Next question. I mean, that was absolute word salad and fantastic job by Reed to get us to say absolutely nothing about the player. Yeah.
Coach speak expert level was what that was. The Bills should pick up Tyreek Hill. That would be epic. No matter how you slice it, it could be an epic failure. It could be an epic success for Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. That'd be a fascinating combination.
I don't think combination. Tyreek, I've said this on the show before. I don't think if Tyreek Hill signs with anyone, for the texter's point, the Bills, I don't think he is signing with anyone until August. I think the NFL people are going to let that surgery happen. They're going to let him rehab, and then they're going to let him get as healthy as possible and then see if he can pass the physical in August. I don't think they're going to be a breaking news sounder. I don't think you're hosting a show one night, Logan, and all of a sudden it's like, hey, by the way, Tyreek Hill is a Bronco, and it's March 14th. I don't think that's the case. I think the Tyreek Hill conversation is going to be one that, you know how sports talk radio guys like us joke about, you got to have just a topic ready at all times.
Yeah.
Like, the stadium has done that for a long time for us. I think if it's June and there's something to talk about, you know, Tyreek Hill's still a free agent. 913. I think that's how it's going to be played with Tyreek Hill. I think time is going to be dwindling by before a team takes a risk on him because of the health factors.
Yeah, this sort of feels to, and I'm with you on the, like, August, September, you know, sometime during the season. Like, this feels a little bit like, and I'm not saying it's exactly the same situation, but Tyreek Hill and this whole, yeah, an additional off-season surgery is just bizarre. It feels a little bit like the Christian Wilkins situation with the Raiders, where he signs the massive deal, and then he has the Jones fracture, and he goes on season-ending injured reserve. He does weird things with his rehab process and these surgeries, so they cut him and they, you know, move on from him, and nobody else wants to touch him because they don't know exactly how the rehab process is playing out. So I kind of think that the two situations might be a little bit similar. The only reason, and this is not, in my opinion, a justifiable reason to sign Tyreek Hill, But since the Chiefs drafted Xavier Worthy, right, we have been asking for Xavier Worthy to play more like Tyreek Hill, to unlock something within himself with that elite speed that he has, you know, to be to the Chiefs today what Tyreek Hill was to the Chiefs 5 years ago, 6 years ago. I feel like by bringing in Tyreek Hill himself, he could maybe help push Xavier Worthy to that. He could help him along the way, sort of mentor him a little bit. But is it really worth signing him for that? Like, I mean, bringing him in as a wide receiver on this team, paying him still decent money, I would imagine. You're not going to have to pay him $30 million a year like the Dolphins were. I don't know. I just, with that being the biggest positive I take away from a potential Tyreek Hill signing, it doesn't move the needle towards you should sign him, at least in my opinion. I don't know. I got an 816 in the text line. Yeah, I'm not reading that. Xavier Worthy can't hold Tyreek's. Okay. You're both crazy. Once back to healthy, 70% of Hill is light years better than what we had last season. For the right price, I'll take it every day. Not exactly sure Tyreek Hill is even at healthy going to be 70% of the Tyreek Hill that we saw in Kansas City.
I don't know if it's going to be 70% of the Tyreek Hill we saw in Miami. And by the way, you could argue he was really good in Miami that first year. Like he had a 2,000 yard receiver. I'm not diminishing the player, but he had a massive injury. And Tom Pelissero, who doesn't just say things, on his report when he got cut was like, you know, we'll see if he even plays in 2026. So like the idea that he'll be at 70%, people in the NFL know these things better than me. I don't know how healthy he is, and I'm not investing in a receiver who might be IR status all year. The Chiefs might need two receivers this offseason. If Rashee Rice is going to be suspended, plus you already need another because their room is lacking in depth, I don't know. I'm taking a dart throw at Tyreek Hill when I have bigger needs. If I was a team that was pretty set at wide receiver and I could survive the Tyreek Hill health scare, for like a better term, I might be willing to do it. But if you're the Bears, I'll just pick a team that I know have two receivers. You have Adunze, you have Burton, you have DJ Moore. You can maybe take a cheap risk at Tyreek Hill and see if he comes back healthy. But if you're the Chiefs, you have Rice, who might get suspended. You have Worthy, who came off an injury last season and looked like he regressed. And you have Jalen Royals, who's an idea. He's a concept.
Yeah.
He's a figment of your imagination. He never played last year. So, yeah, I don't know that the Chiefs can be the team rolling the dice.
No, I completely agree. And not with all the other injury things that you're having to overcome on that offense anyway. I mean, you're going to bring in a Tyreek Hill who has questionable injury, you know, status coming into this year to potentially catch passes from Patrick Mahomes, who's coming off of a serious injury, who is being protected at left tackle by Josh Simmons, who's coming off of a pretty significant injury. I just... way more questions than answers in that situation, and adding more questions in Tyreek Hill, I don't think is the right way to approach this offseason. Somebody, an 816 in the text line said, we should, wow, this is the most absurd thing maybe I've read today. We should have kept Hill and traded Kelsey. What makes you say that? Is it the three straight Super Bowl bursts and the two Super Bowl wins that makes you say that? You saying this team could have been more successful in the last half decade since they traded Tyreek Hill?
Also, didn't Tyreek Hill reset the wide receiver market? The Chiefs are never going to pay that number. Tyreek Hill has made more money than Travis Kelce since the trade, like by a large amount. There's a lot. You can be sad that the Chiefs traded Tyreek Hill, but it has worked out and it was the right move at the right time.
Now it's just a bunch of people in the text line saying that Xavier Worthy's a bust. Worthy is closer to John Ross than Tyreek Hill. Worthy clearly will never be Tyreek Hill. Really? Clearly? He's 22 years old. I get so tired of this with people. That he's had 2 years in this league. Once as a rookie, where everybody around him got hurt, and then as a second-year player, where he got hurt. He's never been fully healthy with a complement of teammates beside him. No pun intended, worthy teammates beside him. I mean, let's sit here and act like Tyreek Hill was this absolute can't-miss prospect who burst onto the scene as a rookie and just wowed people. Really? Hey, let's look at Tyreek Hill's rookie stats. 61 catches, 593 yards, 6 touchdowns. You know what that sounds like? Sounds a hell of a lot. Like, oh, I don't know, Xavier Worthy's rookie year. But yeah, let's just write off the 22-year-old as complete and utter garbage before we allow him to hit the prime of his career. Let's go, folks. Figure it out. That's absolutely absurd. 913-586-7965. More coming up here on The Drive. Logan Weber, Rob Britton, 96.5 The Fan.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
Boy, I didn't expect Xavier Worthy to be the contentious subject on the show today, but here we are. 913-586-7965. Rob, folks in the text line are asking about your opinion here. Okay, are you ready right now today to completely write off 22-year-old Xavier Worthy as a bust and somebody the Chiefs should not consider having anything to do with moving forward?
I will say this. Carrington says he's closing on using the B word with Xavier Worthy. I think he is closer to Mecole Hardman than he is, I pick a fast wide receiver that's, I don't want to use Tyreek Hill, but pick a wide receiver who's a success in the league. I think Xavier Worthy is underwhelming in his time in Kansas City. There's still value in having him on the field. He still can help your roster. You would never be like, I don't want that guy, but he is far more wide receiver three gadget guy than he is the thing we were sold. Like, remember when he was drafted, it was, oh, they finally got a downfield threat. They got a deep ball guy. Have you seen any deep passes completed to Xavier Worthy over these 2 years? I mean, outside the one in the Super Bowl when the Chiefs were down 40 to nothing, they were just getting smoked. I don't think he is a bust. I think that's aggressive. I don't think he's going to live up to his draft positioning is best way for me to say it was Xavier Worthy. And I'm a person who's down on Xavier Worthy.
Listen, I feel like people are, maybe I wasn't being entirely clear. I am not expecting Xavier Worthy to be Tyreek Hill. I feel like you'd be foolish to say he's going to be Tyreek Hill. What I was saying was that I feel like the Chiefs want him in that mold. They want him to be that type of player. A guy with game-breaking speed who can bust a play wide open, make it, you know, take the top off the defense, that sort of thing. That's what I'm not asking him to be Tyreek Hill. Frankly, if he could be Jaylen Waddle to Tyreek Hill's Tyreek Hill during their time in Miami, that's sort of the guy that I would love to see from Xavier Worthy. I'm not asking him to be a guy who has 2,000 all-purpose yards and 15 touchdowns. If he can be a guy who has 900 yards receiving, 1,000 yards receiving, you know, be right around that 1,000-yard mark on a year-to-year basis. I mean, his rookie year, Xavier Worthy's rookie year, 59 catches, 638 yards, 6 touchdowns through the air. He also had another 100 yards on the ground and 3 rushing touchdowns. That's not even taking into account what he was able to accomplish in the playoffs. If Xavier Worthy, healthy, you know, hopefully this offseason we see the guy put 10 or 15 pounds on, at least. Get the guy up from 160 or 165, closer to that 175, 180 mark. If he can be a guy that catches 70 passes a year for around 800 or 900 yards, maybe up to 1,000, he pushes towards double-digit touchdowns between receiving and rushing. I have no problem with that.
See, now you're gonna push me into coming off like a Xavier Worthy hater, and that I didn't think we'd do this, but here we go. You said you wanted him to be Jaylen Waddle. Jaylen Waddle's worst NFL career would be better than the best NFL career Xavier Worthy's ever had. Like, you say you want him to be a 900-yard receiver. He hasn't sniffed that in his NFL career. Now, I'm with you. This is where I'm not going to say he's a bust. He's still 22, going to be 23, going into the third year in the league. There is still opportunity for growth. What does growth look like for him? Because I don't think he's a 1,000-yard receiver in the league. I don't think he's going to get enough volume of targets. I don't think he's good enough as a player. I think he's fragile because just of his stature. So I think if you get 650 to 750 out of him year in, year out, which is what you got out of Mecole Hardman during his 1.0 run in Kansas City, you should be fine with that. I don't think you should be happy because you don't want to draft that Mecole Hardman at draft position 29, but I don't think he's some 900 to 1,000-yard guy. I don't think he's, hey, maybe he can turn to Jalen Waddle. Jalen Waddle had 1,300 yards at one point in his NFL career. Now, he was the number one target. There were six games last year, or I guess four because of injury, where Worthy was the number one target. He wasn't pacing for 1,300 yards. He was pacing for being a gadgety weapon more than he was the number one receiver type. So I'm not as strong on Worthy as Carrington is, who is calling him a bust, but I definitely fall closer to that side of the scale with Xavier Worthy.
I'm absolutely not willing to throw that out yet. I don't think we're anywhere near that point. He's never had the proper opportunity. I mean, he came in as a rookie. They slow played his involvement in the offense. They wouldn't let him return punts and kicks to begin his career. They wanted him in the offense. They tried to slow play it. Hollywood Brown gets hurt. Then Rashee gets hurt. And all of a sudden, he's thrust into a situation in the Chiefs offense that he was not at all equipped for at that point. Running routes that he was not prepared to run during the course of the preseason and training camp and all those things. And then year two, first drive of the first game of the season, he has the shoulder issue. And then there's the ankle problem that was bothering him all season. Rashee is out because of suspension. He misses a bunch of time. He comes back, he's not the same player. Travis is another year older. Hollywood Brown wasn't super effective. Tyquan Thornton was arguably your best receiver. It was just a nightmare situation. Not to mention the fact, and maybe this is, I don't know if this is poor taste in hindsight, but the Chiefs were also, their wide receiver room was being coached by a guy who'd never coached the position before, who was fired this offseason for his lack of ability to coach and develop these guys. Now he's got a legitimate bona fide wide receiver coach, a new offensive coordinator in Eric Bieniemy that this team believes that they can work much more seamlessly with. And I'll go back to the same thing. The guy's only 23 years old. And for the person in the text line saying a 900-yard first round pick with five touchdowns is a bust. I didn't say five touchdowns. I said 800 or 900 yards receiving every year, around 11 to 1200 yards all purpose between rushing and receiving as sort of that gadgety kind of player, and right around double digit touchdowns. 900 yards for a first round pick. LOL. Okay. Anybody have a guess for how many 1,000-yard receivers there were in the NFL this year?
I don't know the number.
19.
How many were wide receivers? Because I imagine a tight end. I imagine Trey McBride probably.
One tight end. So 18 okay. Wide receivers managed 1,000 yards this year. Here are just a few of the guys that didn't have 1,000 yards receiving this year. I don't know. Emeka Abuka. Let's keep going down the list here. Oh, DK Metcalf. That's a good one. Drake London. How about that? T. Higgins. Devontae Adams. Ladd McConkey. Michael Pittman Jr. Several of those guys were first-round picks. They didn't manage 1,000 yards receiving this year. Are they busts? Is it time?
I can't believe I'm in this position again, but I don't love the Chad O'Shea narrative about how he was being coached by a guy who shouldn't be the wide receiver coach, and I'm not here to defend Connor Embry. I think he did a bad job. But that same offensive coordinator, wide receiver coach in a rookie year had second-round pick Rashee Rice had 900 yards. So despite, you know, a goof troop of people leading the brigade at wide receiver coach and offensive coordinator, they found a way to make Rashee Rice a near 1,000-yard receiver in year one. That's not what Xavier Worthy was in year one, and he regressed in year two. I also think if you want to give him a pass for the injuries, that's fine. I understand that. I think he is a player that is going to battle injuries in his career, though, because of his stature. I think if you were to strap a, what was it, polygraph to the 31 other GMs in the league and ask, hey, what was the biggest red flag about Xavier Worthy in the draft? I bet you get 25 saying, well, he's 5'11", 152 pounds, soaking wet. Like, I understand he got hurt, but I'm not giving him a pass because I think he's going to be a guy that battles injury in his career because of his stature. Like, guys that size aren't usually 15-year players in the league.
Yeah, and again, I 100% think what you're get what you're saying. I don't think that Xavier Worthy is going to play at 5'11", 165 pounds for the rest of his career. I am fully of the belief that he's going to be able to put on an extra 15 or 20 pounds. He's got enough, but his body type allows for him to put on some additional weight. I fully believe that. I mean, Tyreek Hill's playing at 5'7" and 190 pounds. I think it's way too early to be sitting here talking about it's over for Xavier Worthy and the Chiefs need to do this or do that. Somebody said, why do you need Hollywood Brown to get open? What? You need additional receivers with talent so that you're not the primary focus of the offense. And I feel like everybody is, all the Xavier Worthy haters right now are just glossing over the fact that the guy played hurt all year. I think we just need to take a beat. Let's just see what happens. 913-586-7965. Imagine if that was Roquan Smith instead of Kelsey. Would he have died? Oh my God. I was thinking more along the lines of like a Vontaze Burfict situation. Like what happened to AJ Brown, him coming across the middle. Yeah, he might have ended up in the hospital for a day or two had that been the case. Logan Weber here alongside Rob Brenton. You're listening to The Drive, 96.5, The Fan.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison and Rob Brenton.
You losers is what you are.
On your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5, The Fan.
I'm not talking about Xavier Worthy anymore. Spend my time with that. Not where I thought we were going on this show tonight. Where we ended up, that's all right. And I got people that agree and I got people that are disagreeing with me. All good. How about the U.S.? We got a gold medal match to get to.
Yeah, it's 7 a.m. on Sunday. Who scheduled that, NBC?
Yeah, I don't think they got the... That feels like a bad time change configuration that somebody put together at NBC.
Especially considering, listen, I've watched a lot of the hockey because it's on at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, which means that show starts, we go to break at 2:11, I throw the game on, it's just on back here.
Right.
Then you on a weekend on Sunday, it's 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Central to start. That seems like bad clock management by NBC.
Which is... Again, I'm legitimately asking if somebody in the text line could answer this for me. What time would that be in Italy? So if it's 7 a.m. Central time here in the States that game is starting, what time would that be where the Olympics is currently being held? That's my question. Because maybe that's the reason why. Maybe they want to, they want to carry it live. I really don't know. You're right. It seems extremely strange to me. It's sort of like Olympic hockey is arguably the coup de grace of the Winter Olympics. But I guess if you're super into it, 7 a.m. on Sunday, that's where you can hang your hat. U.S. dominated Slovakia today 6-2, and it wasn't that close. I mean, this thing was 5-1 5-0 going into the third period. And at the 10, almost the 11 minute mark of the third period, it was 6-1 in favor of the U.S. It was another late goal from Slovakia that made it that 6-2 score. But I mean, what a performance from the United States as they themselves move on to the gold medal match where they will, shockingly for all, I'm sure, match up with Canada. Who could have possibly seen that coming?
Apparently not NBC. They never saw it. Just got blindsided by it. Text line is pointing out that's 2 p.m. Italy time. I think closing ceremonies are Sunday, but I mean, we've seen sports and we've seen TV push things to benefit them. I'm
closing,
just surprised.
And the closing ceremony begins at 1:30. Central time on Sunday. So, I mean, if it, game starts at 7 Central, it'll be over at 9:30, 10 a.m.
Yeah.
Roughly around that time.
At 10 a.m., be done at noon, and then have them get out their pads and head to the closing ceremonies.
Yeah, the encore broadcast scheduled for 9 p.m. Eastern time. I do not care about an encore broadcast. I'm not sure I'll watch the first one, just being completely honest about it. What else do we have in the Olympics coming up this weekend? I mean, the total medal count, the United States has moved into second. There you go. I have a hard time believing anybody's going to catch Norway at this point with 17 gold medals and 37 total medals. They are well ahead of the field right now. The U.S. has 10 gold medals and only 29 total. So it appears Norway is going to come out of this thing as the nation to beat in the Winter Olympics as we head towards 2030. But looking at the schedule of events for tomorrow, you've got the bronze medal game, Slovakia and Finland, and then the women's 12.5-kilometer biathlon.
Yeah, that sounds like a college basketball day for me. I'm not the world's biggest Winter Olympic guy, but that's not a schedule that excites for a Saturday afternoon to be like, you know what? I'm gonna go watch the biathlon. I'm locked in. It's
you know,
not for me.
I agree with you. If it weren't for the fact of what I have to do tomorrow, I would rather watch the Olympics. You get to watch college basketball all day tomorrow, Rob. I get to officiate youth basketball all day tomorrow. It's going to be great. First game starts at 9. Last game starts at 5. 9 basketball games.
That's a lot of screaming parents, buddy.
Yeah. Lot of fourth grade boys basketball action, I believe.
I don't know if you know this, but everyone's son just got hacked, and you didn't see it.
It's
terrible by you.
That's true. I'm gonna get screamed at. I just know it.
And no kids ever committed a foul. Just so you know,
we've had some technical fouls this year. We had a parent get thrown out. We've called the cops. That has happened. Youth basketball. Somebody said you can watch Darren Peterson sit on the bench. Give us the name of the flopping ref. I don't know him. I don't officiate with that guy. He does high school basketball. I just do youth games. My niece's youth league back in my hometown. Oh, that'll do it. Not for me, though. I'm here for another 3 hours. JT Noah and I are going to take you the rest of the way tonight on After Hours. But for my producer, Rob Britton, I've been Logan Weber. You've been listening to The Drive, 96.5, The Fan.
Ladies and gentlemen, The Weeknd.